What if the secret to a lifelong love of your sport wasn't just in how you train your body? What joy, possibility, and performance could be unlocked through the power of mental fitness? Well, you're about to find out. Welcome to the MindFit Athlete Podcast. If you want to figure out what's holding you back, then you're in the right place. Now, here's your host, John Ray.
Welcome back to the MindFit Athlete Podcast. I'm joined today by my two training partners, Scott and Emily. Lovely to connect with you both again.
Good to be here.
I'm really looking forward to our chat today. It's great to be with you.
Let's start with a scenario that I think is going to sound all too familiar for many of us. It's 6 a.m. You know you shouldn't start your day this way, but it seemed there was a real chance of a serious escalation in the U.S.-Iran war. Maybe not erasing an entire civilization this time, but serious threats had been issued. Another ultimatum had been given. This time, assets could be seized. You just had to see what had happened overnight. You gave in and you scrolled. You've got an important day ahead of you at work. Like so many of us, you are concerned about rising prices and making ends meet. You're carrying the weight of a troubled world on your shoulders. But this is supposed to be your time. You put the phone aside, put on your heart rate monitor, and begin to measure your HRV.
And the HRV4 training app tells you a very frustrating story. Your resting heart rate has spiked by 5 beats per minute, while your heart rate variability, it's done the opposite. It's dived. The app signals, take it easy today. Your body is telling you that you are chronically stressed. And you haven't even taken a single step yet.
Why is this happening? Because for days now, like much of the rest of us, you have been consumed by a tidal wave of geopolitical chaos, inflammatory headlines, and political rage.
For so many of us, our sport is the one place where we don't have to be perfect, where we don't have to carry the weight of the world. It's our shelter from the storm. But right now, there is this chronic, low-grade fever of global anxiety that is leaking into all aspects of our lives. The news is often high stakes. There's a deal. There's no deal. It's impossible to predict. Full of contradiction. An endless drama. And it's exhausting. And if your internal saboteurs are telling you that you're alone and somehow inadequate because you feel this way, I need you to hear me. You aren't alone. And you aren't weak. There are millions of us all around the globe feeling exactly this way.
Right. You are just the same as the rest of us. These really are exceptional times. And I make no apology for choosing this topic. If the positive intelligence framework has any value, it's right now. But before we dive into today's episode, we need to make a very clear, very important distinction about what this podcast is, and perhaps more importantly, what it isn't.
Because today we are going to talk about the global impact of the current US administration. We are going to consider Donald Trump's approval rating at an historic low of negative 25%. Data heavily driven by the macroeconomic fallout of the war in Iran and a rising cost of living.
We are going to talk about a full-on communication style that relies heavily on confusion, negativity, and hyperbole. That exhausting and calculated flooding-the-zone strategy. The attention-grabbing rage bait that seems to dictate our daily news feeds. But let me be absolutely clear, this is not an anti-Trump voter podcast. Nor is it a partisan attack.
Not at all. And objectivity is so important to ground ourselves in right now. The author of The Three Principles, Sidney Banks, wrote, "Everyone is doing the best they can, given the thinking that looked real to them." I firmly believe that in 2024, the vast majority of U.S. voters made the best choice they could. Given their life experience, given their responsibilities, their aspirations, and their sources of information, they did their best. They might have voted for what they thought Trump promised, or they might have voted against what they thought Harris offered.
And Emily, in the framework of positive intelligence, we practice a core discipline, don't we? We separate the person from the behavior. Every single human being on this earth is worthy of love. Every person possesses a core of fundamental goodness. But human beings are all too often and easily hijacked by their internal saboteurs. And when those saboteurs take the wheel on the global stage, they can produce behavior that is regressive, repulsive, and highly damaging to our collective well-being.
I am a coach, and coaching promotes a fulfilled life, lived in active alignment with your values. Sometimes you hear people say that professional athletes should stay out of politics. But I think that is a profound misunderstanding of what a moral compass is. If your values dictate that you care about mental health, about integrity, and the global community, you must have a view when those things are threatened.
It reminds me of how the philosopher Edmund Burke is often paraphrased. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. In our PQ training, we talk about the principle of accept or convert. Some people mistake acceptance for passive surrender. It is not. Passive acceptance of systemic harm is a betrayal of our values.
Yes, John. For me, acceptance simply means we stop wasting our precious energy arguing with reality. We accept the facts of the geopolitical landscape so that we can stop reacting out of panic. And we start responding with fierce, intentional, clear-headed action. We accept what is until it is the right time for us to convert it into something better.
So today we are not here to attack the humanity of any leader or any voter. We are here to examine the behavior that is draining our mental fitness and lowering our HRV on a global scale.
And hopefully, through exploring the situation, we can begin to reclaim our power to do something about it. Because the United States matters. King Charles, speaking just a month ago to a joint session of the US Congress, said, "America's words carry weight and meaning as they have since independence. The actions of this great nation matter even more." America isn't just another country on the map, especially not for an endurance athlete.
No, it really isn't. It is the landscape where the modern limits of human potential were defined, quantified, and coached. When I see that landscape dominated by transactional rage bait, it feels like an assault on the very birthplace of my athletic soul.
I think, like many people, I've been feeling a genuine sense of grief about the state of global politics, specifically regarding the behavior of leaders in the United States. I actually had to ask myself, why do I care this much? I'm sitting here in the UK. Why does the behavior of a president thousands of miles away affect my mental well-being so deeply?
Well, there are the practical reasons, of course. Donald Trump's behavior has an immediate impact on our wallets. We are all paying for the macroeconomic fallout and volatile energy markets at the fuel pump, which means we're shortly going to be paying more for anything that needs transported.
Exactly. All those mortgages that got pulled because of economic uncertainty will delay young people's ability to buy their first homes. Trapped fertilizer will disproportionately hurt the world's most vulnerable smallholder farmers across Africa and Asia. Placing Cuba back on the state sponsor of terrorism list has heaped even more pressure on ordinary Cubans after decades of internal repression and mismanagement. Each month seems to bring a new attack on the world order. If it's not designs on Canada or Greenland, it's the cessation of taxpayer-funded military aid to Ukraine or threatening the integrity of NATO.
And then there's that attitude. President Trump said a few weeks ago, "I don't think about Americans' financial situation." Like, really? Even today he was quoted as saying, "I love the inflation." This as U.S. prices rise at their fastest rate in 3 years. His language is hypercharged with adverbs like great, tremendous, and the best, or crooked, fake, and total disaster. He's uninhibited, confrontational, and is a master of the blame game. You could say his style is a highly effective, calculated communication method intentionally designed to dominate modern social media algorithms.
But Emily, if I'm honest and just a little vulnerable, the pain goes deeper than Scott's list of policies and your analysis of why he's so triggering. What's happening now feels to me almost like a betrayal. Because like many of you, I have always held a deeply romanticized vision of what America stands for. Hollywood movies and Lyle Lovett probably explains a lot of this. But to me, America was always that shining city on the hill. I think this image was referenced by JFK, and the idea of it certainly was important to Ronald Reagan. It represented a fierce meritocracy, a beautiful tapestry of cultures, and above all, the audacious belief that you can follow a dream, outwork your circumstances, and make it happen.
Of course, the US has real and deep-rooted problems, just like anywhere else. But I always felt the trajectory of change was positive. That's not my feeling right now.
Scott, when you said you experienced a feeling of grief, I think you got that exactly right. For endurance athletes, America holds a sacred place in our collective DNA. Think about it. In running, the Boston Marathon is the ultimate mecca. Securing a BQ, a Boston qualifying time, is the undisputed global standard of amateur excellence. For ultras, the Western states, Leadville and Badwater are legends.
I think we would have to say that, while it lasted, the myth of Lance Armstrong inspired a generation of distance cyclists.
Yes, it was the complete fairy tale that, sadly, turned out to be exactly that.
And in swimming, while we in the UK might be able to claim the cultural crown for wild outdoor swimming, it is the American pool program that has consistently shattered the ceiling of human capability. We watched Michael Phelps redefine the limits of Olympic history, followed by the relentless distance dominance of Katie Ledecky and Bobby Fink.
And of course, triathlon. The USA is the undeniable spiritual cradle of our sport. From the early days in Mission Bay to the lava fields of Kona, Hawaii, we grew up on the mythic battles of Mark Allen and Dave Scott. They established a 15-year ironclad American reign at the Ironman World Championship. Even as the crown migrated around the world, Kona remains the ultimate theater of human endurance.
But America didn't just give us the races. It gave us the very concept of the modern coach. Modern life and well-being coaching didn't emerge by accident. It is a direct evolution of American sports strategy fused with the 1960s human potential movement. When psychologists like Abraham Maslow and Carl Rogers looked at the human mind, they stopped asking, "What is broken?" And they started asking, "How high can a healthy human climb?" And then the positive psychology movement was born when Martin Seligman took over the American Psychological Association in the late 90s. That philosophy, the belief that we should study what makes people flourish, is our bedrock. It is the foundation for the positive intelligence framework we embrace every day in our practice.
Okay, so it's easy to see how endurance athletes have a special affection for the US, and it's that warm connectedness that contributes to the stunned sense of shock at what's happening right now.
It's a big part of why the mental health toll of the current US administration feels so heavy for so many.
And that mental health impact isn't imagined. It's all too real. There is a peer-reviewed study titled "Politics is Making Us Sick," published in PLOS ONE by political scientist Kevin Smith. The team tracked a nationally representative sample of American adults in Donald Trump's first term between 2017 and 2020. The research rigorously quantified the catastrophic toll that chronic political stress took on the public.
If I remember, the findings were staggering.
Tens of millions of Americans reported severe health markers directly attributed to the political climate, massive spikes in chronic sleep loss, an inability to stop obsessively consuming or posting about politics. Sound familiar, John? People experienced shortened tempers that permanently fractured family and social relationships. Alarmingly, the data estimated that millions of adults even experienced suicidal ideation driven by relentless political anxiety. From a positive intelligence perspective, this study is the ultimate empirical proof. It shows exactly what happens when society's collective judge, hypervigilant and victim saboteurs are constantly triggered by an unregulated, algorithmic environment. The chronic stress quite literally breaks down our physical and emotional health.
For me, I'm very aware that my judge is selling me on the idea that the US is diverging away from my romanticized image, and I can't tell you how much that saddens me. But let's just back it up for a moment. I want to look into my underlying thinking, the thinking that seems so real, driving that sadness and lowering my HRV. Are Americans suddenly different? More isolationist, less dependable, less tolerant, less kind?
Your question invites us to apply the PQ framework's explore to objectively examine what is true. What might surprise you, it certainly surprised me, is how many of the 2024 US electorate didn't actually vote at all. The presidential election turnout was roughly 64%. So when you run the numbers, Donald Trump received votes from approximately 32% of the total eligible US electorate.
So, in fact, back in 2024, the largest political bloc in the United States was the non-voter. If that silent bloc of non-voters had magically united behind a single alternative candidate, they would have won the popular vote decisively.
And this phenomenon is not isolated to the US. Back in 2019 in the UK, Boris Johnson's Conservatives secured 29% of the eligible electorate. Almost 33% of eligible voters did not participate. It's even more stark for Keir Starmer in 2024, winning a landslide majority with only 20% of the popular vote.
So the US is aligned to Trump? Is that true? No, it's not. 68% of the US electorate did not vote for Donald Trump.
Well, that was then. What about now? For months, the Economist's presidential approval rating polls have shown a sharp decline. Right now, that's telling us that Donald Trump has an approval of minus 25%, meaning 60% of the US electorate disapprove, feeling let down by the economy and geopolitical chaos.
So circling back to the Sydney Banks quote, it's easy to see that my mood is actually a consequence of faulty thinking. I am simply wrong to assume that Trump or Hegseth speaks for or embodies the soul of America.
Populist movements rely entirely on projecting an aura of absolute dominance. They use loud rallies, relentless social media flooding, and aggressive rhetoric to make their 32% look and feel like 90%. When you see the minus 25% net approval rating, it proves mathematically that the monolith is a manufactured optical illusion. You feel reassured because the data confirms that your moral compass is not broken and you are not an outlier. A clear, undeniable majority of ordinary Americans find that exact same style and policy approach repellent. Trump holds the mechanical levers of institutional power, but he absolutely does not hold a mandate over the soul of the American public.
I can't pretend to know exactly how we got to this position, but as difficult as I find this to say, I know that it should have happened. Because here we are all living it.
Let's just pause and explore that. The legendary teacher Byron Katie laid down a foundational law for mental peace. She said, "When you argue with reality, you lose, but only 100% of the time." She reminded us that if something exists, it should exist, because the precise conditions required for it to come into being have been completely met.
You know, when we look at the political reality in America right now, our saboteurs want us to panic. We look at the headlines and think, this is a mistake, a glitch in the matrix. But from Katie's perspective, we have to drop that assumption. We didn't get here by accident. The stage was perfectly set.
Exactly, John. If we just look at the history here, it starts with real, profound human pain. Think about America's Rust Belt. You've got millions of everyday people in these forgotten manufacturing towns who watch their economies hollowed out by globalization over decades.
It's funny, we talk about this like it's a recent phenomenon, but this is exactly the person Bruce Springsteen was singing about 40 years ago in Born in the USA. Everyone remembers the triumphant stadium rock chorus, but if you actually listen to the verses, it's about a working class guy who comes home to a dead refinery town, who is ignored by the government, and who has absolutely nowhere to go.
That is a brilliant comparison, John. That is the exact demographic. Those folks didn't care about abstract GDP statistics. They cared that their pride and their communities were being completely dismantled.
Yes, and while they were hurting, they were hitting a political brick wall. The US political system has become completely dominated by money. When politicians are trapped in a nonstop cycle of fundraising, their attention naturally aligns with wealthy corporate donors. The working class folks who actually voted for them, the guys Springsteen was singing about, realized they had been forgotten, and trust in public office just evaporated.
Which, it seems to me, creates a massive cultural chasm. You have folks living through this economic decay, and the language and priorities of the progressive, largely coastal political class just had absolutely zero resonance for them. It felt foreign, elitist, and completely dismissive of their traditional way of life.
And sitting right inside that chasm is a group we rarely talk about with real empathy, young men. Millions of them feeling voiceless, isolated and directionless. They started disappearing into hyper-addictive gaming and digital silos. In 2024, many of them swung from blue to red, simply because they were desperate for anyone who acknowledged their existence and offered them a tribe.
Right, and you can't talk about those young men without talking about their mothers. Women in their 40s to 60s who are watching their sons struggle to find stable jobs and fearing for their futures. These women aren't extreme political ideologues. They just wanted an economic shield for their families.
That's true. The second largest shift from Democrat to Republican in 2024 was middle-aged women.
So look at what we've got here. We have this massive, highly combustible pile of dry kindling. Real grievances, real fears, real isolation. But to reshape a global superpower, that kindling needs oxygen and a spark. And it got exactly that with an unregulated media ecosystem. Unlike here in the UK, where television networks are legally bound by mandates for impartiality, the US media operates as a free market entertainment industry. They figured out decades ago that objective truth is a terrible business model. What actually drives profit is fear, outrage, and partisan validation.
Which locked everyone into an echo chamber. A profit-driven media creates polarization so deep that people literally stop living in the same factual reality. Your neighbor is no longer just someone with a different perspective on tax policy. They are suddenly viewed as an existential threat to your way of life.
Okay, I'd like to offer that the traditional checks and balances have failed too. Congress seems to have become invisible and has largely folded under pressure.
Yes, we've just seen that in the senatorial races in both Louisiana and Texas. Politicians are terrified of being outspent in primaries or deselected by their own outraged base, so they choose party loyalty over constitutional duty. This completely leaves the gates open for a strong executive leader to rule unilaterally.
And into that exact void steps the perfect catalyst, Donald Trump. He was the puzzle piece this environment was waiting for. He understood a profound truth that traditional politicians never grasped. In an entertainment landscape, attention is the ultimate currency. He doesn't care about the delicate mechanics of the Strait of Hormuz. He cares about dominating the narrative.
And he executes that narrative through sheer dynamism. When a population is suffering, traditional politics looks empty or paralyzed. Trump operates in the exact opposite way. He steps into the arena and smashes the conventional. To his base, that looks like fierce vitality. In a broken world, destructive movement feels much more preferable than the no hope of the status quo.
But guys, the absolute linchpin of this entire thing, the variable that multiplies all these elements we just talked about by a factor of 100, is the smartphone in your pocket. The algorithmic saboteur engine.
Exactly. This is the piece that changes everything. Technology companies literally cracked our evolutionary source code. As human beings, we carry an ancient, evolutionary bias toward negativity. It's what kept us safe from predators. But social media algorithms weaponized that. They discovered that nothing triggers our internal saboteurs, our judge, our hypervigilant, our victim, faster than a flood of rage.
The algorithm is designed to bypass your best self, your sage mind, and instead to deeply hook itself into your brain's fear center. If humanity's collective judge saboteur could write code, it would have created Twitter, or X. Your judge thrives on finding fault, assigning blame, and feeling a hit of self-righteous superiority. The algorithm just feeds it an endless buffet.
It's just incredible. We aren't just using technology. We are allowing our most primitive selves to be systematically hijacked for profit.
So when you take real economic pain, feed it through an outrage-driven media, hand it to a chaotic catalyst, and amplify it through an algorithm explicitly designed to keep the brain trapped in fear, then what we see in Washington makes perfect sense. And the hard truth is, you simply cannot argue a person out of an algorithmic fear response with a logic-based statistic.
Actually, this is a great point to remind listeners that we have a free video course on our website. The course is all about finding your mental edge, and it covers a lot of this material. Find it at mindfitathlete.com/edge. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll discuss how the restless saboteur could have written the playbook for this administration. Sadly, we don't have a budget for Bruce Springsteen, but here's 2 minutes of Time Bomb at 1:48 BPM. Welcome back. Now, Emily, I know you have strong thoughts on how this political chaos is actually a strategy.
I do. I have a restless saboteur myself, so I know it when I see it. I think our exhaustion with the administration is in large part a strategic design by Donald Trump. A report published by the Financial Times in May found that he had averaged 19 Truth Social posts a day so far in 2026. Nearly half of these featuring videos or images, which really draw our attention. You'd be forgiven for believing a restless saboteur is actually running the most powerful country in the world. In positive intelligence, the restless saboteur needs constant new stimulation. It bounces rapidly from one thing to the next, unable to maintain deep focus. To mask this lack of depth, the restless saboteur generates constant noise, drama, and chaos.
Well, that fits, and it goes well with the master tactician illusion. This gives him a free hand for the most unstatesmanlike, erratic, even irrational behavior, keeping us all guessing if it's some brilliant negotiation ploy. Something masterful you'd expect to read about in The Art of the Deal.
And picking unnecessary fights. Attacking an ally's wife, demanding to buy Greenland, threatening Canada. It provides the instant dopamine hit of conflict and media attention.
We know from PQ that dealing with someone's restless saboteur is profoundly draining for everyone around them. The chaos acts as a contagion that instantly triggers the hypervigilant saboteur in all of us. When the rules and alliances change daily on a whim, you can never relax. Your nervous system burns massive amounts of energy just trying to establish a baseline of reality. It is the psychological equivalent of trying to run a marathon on shifting sand, hence your resting heart rate and HRV scores.
Right. I'm reminded by what President Macron did with his neither elegant nor up-to-standard comment. Seems to me it is a perfect example of how to handle a restless saboteur using sage energy. When chaos is thrown at you, your internal judge wants to scream back. Your victim wants to complain about how unfair it is. If you do either, the restless saboteur wins. You've been dragged into their game.
Macron did not argue the facts. He did not seem triggered at all. He did not launch a counter-insult. He simply named the behaviour as substandard, set a boundary, and dismissed it. He refused to let Trump's restless and judge energy hijack his own focus.
And as an athlete, and as a leader in your own life, this is exactly how you can handle the capriciousness of the world right now. When the geopolitical noise is acting like a restless saboteur, you do not engage with every distraction. You name the noise for what it is. And you do a PQ rep on what is right in front of you. Then return your focus entirely to your own training and what's controllable in your own life.
Just before we leave this point, there is actual proof of just how exhausting it is to track the outrage. Have you heard of the Washington Post's fact-checker team? During Donald Trump's first term, they meticulously logged every single false claim he made. They tracked exactly 30,573 of them over 4 years, an average of 21 a day.
That's right. And do you know what happened after that? They officially retired the database. The journalists realized that trying to catalogue that sheer volume of daily chaos had become an overwhelming, burnout-inducing time suck. It stole their weekends and destroyed their energy. Counting the noise didn't stop the noise. It just exhausted the people counting it. So why are we giving you all this political analysis on an endurance sports podcast?
Well, for one thing, we just can't avoid it. This is the world for all of us right now. I think to overcome a fear, it really helps to first understand it. Given what we've covered, I hope our discussion reminds the listener they can choose accept or convert and find some peace of mind.
I think it must help to know the combination of factors that have combined for this perfect storm. Given what those young men and rural communities are facing and the options on offer, could they have really chosen differently? What is it like to walk in their shoes? I hope we've helped the listener reconnect to sage skills such as empathy towards those who felt this administration was their only option. That positive emotion can lead to understanding and effective action. It's empowering.
Also because as athletes, you have this skill set already. You understand that peak performance requires repeated application of self-command. When you are deep into a sportif, an ultramarathon, or an Ironman, Your internal saboteurs will scream at you. The hypervigilant will tell you the pain is too dangerous. The victim will tell you it's unfair. The judge will tell you that you aren't strong enough. These are challenges where you face down your saboteurs routinely. Well, the geopolitical landscape right now is just a macro version of that internal battlefield.
Exactly. It's as if the administration has created a global hot stove, and just about every hour they force our hand onto it. Stop wasting your valuable, finite cognitive energy wishing the world was different. Stop letting the phone in your hand trick you into volunteering for those hourly mind hijacks. Every time you log on to rage at a headline, you are letting the saboteur-inspired algorithm win.
In that sense, this administration is a gift to anyone who practices PQ. The triggers are frequent and intense. The challenge for us to manage our brains has never been higher. You could say that right now, we are all competing at the Olympics of mental fitness, with President Trump as your very own personal sage trainer.
As we start to wind this down, I'd like to briefly look at all this through the lens of the sage power, Navigate. Looking at the daily news cycle right now, you'd be forgiven for feeling like civilization is sliding off a cliff. But I want to offer some cognitive perspective. Let's firstly zoom out and look at where we are standing, through the lens of a 300-year historical arc. Then let's play. Ask yourself, 100 years from now, what will have really mattered about this moment, and how do you want to have behaved during it?
Great point, John. Since the 18th century Enlightenment, humanity has been on an undeniable upward trajectory. Over the last three centuries, the general trend has been toward progress, tolerance, and scientific reason. Yes, there have been horrific downs and dark chapters, but the macro trend is clear. We have become a more collaborative, successful species.
But right now, I'd say this moment looks like a reversal, as if the pendulum of progress is swinging backward. But instead of throwing up our hands in defeat, if we can understand the reasons why, then we can choose for things to be different. Because hidden inside this crisis is a civilizational gift.
Think back to the Industrial Revolution. We figured out how to mass produce goods. But those early factories were completely unregulated. Children were put to work inside dangerous machinery. Toxic sludge was dumped into rivers. For a period of time, the Industrial Revolution looked like a human catastrophe.
But society woke up. We built child labour laws. We created environmental protection agencies. We regulate food safety, prescription drugs, and aviation. But right now, in the digital age, we are living in the toxic, unregulated infancy of the smartphone era. And the pollutant isn't chemical sludge in our rivers. It is psychological sludge in our minds.
The coder judge is running rampant. We have allowed a handful of tech billionaires to put an outrage machine into the pockets of 8 billion people. It destroys compassion, kindness, tolerance, and empathy, all for the sake of ad revenue.
But a gift of this crisis is that the danger of what we see playing out on the world stage is now impossible to ignore. The chaos is forcing us to recognize the deep, systemic damage of unregulated social media. We are approaching the historical tipping point where we will be forced to regulate the digital landscape. It's possible, if enough of us act, that we will look back on this era of algorithmic manipulation with the exact same horror that we look back on Victorian child labour.
The cure is coming because this crisis has made it non-negotiable. But while we wait for the slow gears of history to turn, you have a training session today, you have a team to lead, customers to reach out to, a family to nurture. So let's come up with easy, actionable, activate steps that can help.
As we've said throughout our discussion, the answer to the hot stove is the PQ rep. Use your self-awareness to notice your stress and bring your mind back into the moment.
Then I'd say, take deliberate steps to disempower the algorithm. Social media apps usually offer two options. The default is the For You or Home feed, and it's the algorithmic feed. This is when the app decides what to show you based on your data, your vulnerabilities, and what will keep you hooked the longest. Even if you don't follow an account, if that account posts something that triggers saboteur contagion, like outrage or fear, and people are interacting with it, the algorithm pushes it into your For You feed. Then there's the Following or Latest feed. This is known as the chronological feed. This is the closest you can get to opting out of the algorithm. When you look into settings and choose this option, the app only shows you posts from people or pages you have explicitly chosen to follow, arranged in strict time order, most recent first. No AI recommendations, no forced outrage bait from strangers, just the people you chose. While platforms don't make it easy to bypass their algorithms, they are legally required, especially due to recent tech laws like the EU's Digital Services Act, to give you the option to switch to a non-algorithmic feed.
I'd like to add to that, Scott. Please be diligent by making sure you don't follow people you don't trust and use any block options to keep your feed clean.
Next, break out of the echo chamber. Go out of your way to read an article, always from a trusted source, from a completely different point of view. Not to get triggered by it, but to understand the human being on the other side. An example is to choose two different weekend newspapers if you are old school, or two divergent websites, for example, the Daily Telegraph and the Guardian. Read widely and make your own choice. In the same way, take a fierce stand for tolerance in your daily conversations. Think of Sage Explore. Ask yourself, what else is true?
Next, choose to heal. We know there is a generation of young men searching for purpose. If you run a club or a local sports team, make it your mission to actively recruit them. Show them the healthy dopamine hit that comes from pushing your physical limits in training. Give them a tribe that heals them, nurtures, and builds them up, instead of an algorithm that tears them down.
Take positive action. Write a thoughtful, measured letter or email to your political representative. Make the rational case for electoral reform and social media consumer regulations. For example, you could ask for algorithmic transparency. Currently, foreign tech billionaires operate black box algorithms that intentionally amplify outrage and societal division for profit with zero oversight. The European Union has already passed the Digital Services Act, legally forcing platforms to open their algorithms to independent researchers and regulatory bodies to prove they aren't harming public health. If these companies can comply with algorithmic transparency in Europe, they possess the technology to do it in the UK and the US. Ask your representative to support legislation that mandates algorithmic audits and ends the era of self-regulation. Be the persistent voice they cannot ignore.
That's good, but can I add to it? Social media platforms are just massive ad delivery machines. The brands paying for those ads are terrified of something called brand safety and brand suitability. They do not want their wholesome product sitting right next to a toxic, hateful, or aggressive post. It's a PR nightmare. But because algorithms place these ads in milliseconds, it happens all the time. So here's a call to action for our listener. Next time your saboteurs get triggered by an unacceptable post, don't engage with the content. Don't leave an angry comment. That just feeds the algorithm. Instead, accept the gift.
Right. You capture it. You take a screenshot. Make sure you get the offensive content and the advert sitting right next to it in the exact same frame.
Exactly. And then you take that screenshot and you send it to the brand. Not the social media platform, the brand. Hit them up on LinkedIn, find their chief marketing officer or their head of PR, or tag them publicly on a chronological feed. And here is exactly what you say to them. You say, "I am a regular consumer of your products, but I was shocked by your lack of brand safety controls. Your programmatic ad buying just placed your product next to malicious, aggressive content. I've attached the proof."
Then you drop the hammer. You ask them, "Can you provide evidence of your brand suitability policy? Are you actively ensuring your marketing budget is only connected to authoritative, positive, and life-affirming spaces? Because until you stop funding algorithmic toxicity, I will be boycotting your products."
That is how you use your sage. You turn a moment of outrage into a gift of accountability. It takes 2 minutes, it starves your own saboteurs of the outrage cycle, and if enough of us do it, it forces advertisers to pull their money.
And when the money moves, the algorithms change.
Brilliant. So, homework for everyone listening. Don't just doom scroll. Go find a gift, take a screenshot, and send an email. We each can help to clean this up. And finally, default to kindness. The ultimate act of defiance against a system built on rage is positive intelligence. Go out of your way today to create deliberate acts of kindness for three people, online or in person. Make someone smile. See someone for who they are. Appreciate them. Just a small gesture is enough. But do it. So, Has your thinking shifted? What looks real to you now? Maybe that shining city on the hill really is still there, just hidden by the mist, a mist that won't be there for long. Maybe you will reconnect with your own power and creativity and become part of a social media movement that inspires what is best in our humanity. And maybe you'll convince your club to transform the health, well-being and outlook of the young men who are so desperately isolated. Do some of these things, PQ rep like an Olympian, and you'll give your HRV its best chance to bounce back tomorrow. Don't forget our free Mental Edge course at mindfitathlete.com/edge. Thank you for listening to the MindFit Athlete podcast. I've been John.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Emily. Now go out there, protect your energy, and smash your training this week.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mind Fit Athlete podcast. If you've enjoyed today's material and you'd like to dive deeper, our Mind Fit Athlete community is waiting for you over at mindfitathlete.com. That's where we take these insights and integrate them into our everyday lives. In fact, we're on a mission to help everyone build their mental fitness so they can choose happiness, thrive, and make a positive difference. We are building our mental fitness in sport and in life, and we'd absolutely love to have you join us.